That is a good word.
Hey, let's call this meeting to order. Ask everyone to rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And a roll call of members.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Hattery?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Mr. Joseph?
Here.
Ms. Keeper?
Present.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne? Mr. Proto?
Here.
Mr. Randall?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson?
Present.
Ms. Chalk?
Here.
Mr. Kaplinka-Lair?
Here.
14 members present.
Petitions, communications, and notices?
Communications are on the desks.
We have no special words of the day. We'll move to privilege of the floor of the public. Anyone here to speak to the legislature? Seeing none, we'll move to privilege of the floor for legislators. Nope, wait, Will wanted to speak. Say your name and residence.
Good evening. My name is Will Burbank. I'm a town board member in the town of Ithaca. And I really welcome the opportunity to come and share with you a few of the things that have been going on in the town. I'm going to go through a pretty long list, and I would invite any of you to give us a call if there are any questions you'd like to know about them. First, the town, as you probably know, is very interested in the question of affordable housing. We very much appreciate the leadership that Ed Marks has been showing in this realm, and in terms of creating a housing trust and housing fund. You may have read in the paper that we are in the process of trying to work with a developer who is interested in bringing a assisted living facility that would be exclusively for Medicaid eligible residents, and an 80-bed facility. We are trying to work out a suitable site, and we think that this would bring something to our community that has not been, and we are very hopeful that this will happen. Walkable neighborhoods is another area we've been very interested in, and we appreciate the county's walkability study. And that's going to be, we're going to be drawing on that to apply for a safe school grant. So we thank you for helping us get started on that. We are very committed to trails, pedestrian and bike trails, and we are finally getting some motion on the Gateway Trail, which is that trail that starts over the Turquoise Bridge down near Home Depot and will eventually go all the way up past South Hill School and connect, we hope, to the South Hill Recreation Trail. But we are in the process of doing some preliminary studies and working out that. It will also connect with what I'm very pleased to see is the Black Diamond Trail. And I long wondered if this would ever come to fruition in my lifetime. And there is, as you've probably read, the state is actually freeing up some money, $150,000 in that first batch, I gather. And things are in motion. So we are hopeful that there are going to be a lot more trails. Infrastructure, the town is of course, collaborating on the county-led Route 96 corridor study. We're very hopeful that good things will come out of that. We're working on the county-led sewer and water study. So that was the big laundry list. I wanted to add one last thing that connects to one of my duties on the town. I'm the town's representative to an oversight committee that is concerned with public access in this community. And that's sort of citizens-made videos that appear on Cable 13 if you live in the city or in the town. I don't know what it's like when you get further out. But it's sort of a part of this larger system that allows the county and the city to broadcast their meetings. And I want to praise you folks for doing this. I think it's a wonderful service. Though I rarely have come to your meetings, I have many times caught parts of them on TV and found them, you know, very, very interesting. And I am hopeful that maybe the town will follow your good lead and be able to do this at some point. What we all should be aware of, however, is that the system that allows us to do this is kind of in peril right now, happened by changes that are happening around the country as there are moves to remove from localities control over these systems and move them to state-level franchises. And there have been a number, about some 20-odd states, where local communities have lost the ability to do cable casting of public meetings or local community public broadcasting or public access programs. So short term, we got it. Let's enjoy it. Let's use it. Be aware that it's in peril and it may need our defense. But for the time being, we're very, very appreciative. And once again, if any of you have any questions, feel very free to give me a call. And thank you.
Thank you, Will. Quick question. Frank?
Will, will you take a question right now?
Of course, Frank.
Can you say anything more about the timetable for the assisted living facility and what the status of that is?
We're actually trying, Frank, we're trying to make that happen relatively quickly because the state has given the developer approval. We'd like to see it happen relatively quickly, but we have to find a suitable site. And they had asked for, the sites they were proposing would have involved a change in zoning, and there were some environmental issues that people had in terms of the specifics, but I'm hopeful we'll come up with one either that would not involve a zoning change or would be relatively easy for us to do.
I mean, if everything fell into place,
yeah.
What would it be online within a year or two?
That would be certainly my hope. I think that's their desire, but I once again, you never know how these things go.
Good. Thank you.
Martha.
Martha?
Dave, I haven't heard anything about Lakeside recently. I don't know if Nathan, you're smiling. Is this in direct competition? Is it a different service or what?
Frank can answer that question.
No, it's not in direct competition. The beds are different for different purposes. Lakeside is perking along. They've received some very positive results. Implications from the state. Nothing is finalized yet, but we've had a meeting of that special committee. I've taken Nathan's place on that committee, and Lisa is extremely happy with the progress, and hopefully, we met in January, and hopefully we'll have something to report this month on the progress of that. But the state has been all of the work that everyone has done seems to have paid off. So,
any other questions? Thank you very much, Will.
Thank you.
Now to privilege of the floor for legislators. Pam.
Well, I just wanted to remind everybody that the polls are open until 9 o'clock tonight, and to be sure to exercise your right and your responsibility to vote in the primary.
Anyone else? Jim.
Thank you, Michael. I wanted to mention an event coming up, and I have some personal interest in it. It's sponsored by a group from Cornell University. It's called the Preservation Studies Student Organization, and they're doing a benefit rock and roll concert at it will be, let me see where it is, and why don't I know where it is? At any rate, it's in College Town. I'm sorry. In,
probably at 9.
Yeah, no, it's in College Town. It costs $5, and there are two great bands playing. One is called Candy Pants, and the other is called The Sutras. And it's on February 16th, and you'll be overjoyed if you happen to go. And also, what the student group is working on is preservation in relation to historic Ithaca, and they are working on Stuart Park specifically, looking at the boathouse and that whole area of Stuart Park from my days on city council needs to get looked at, and they have a volunteer effort to take a look and make some recommendations to the city on all that area.
And if people want to know the place, they can follow up with Jim. Tyke and then Frank.
I'd like to invite everybody to the upcoming Grattan Winterfest on February 16th and 17th.
2 days this year, two locations, one at the Grattan Elementary School, Saturday from 10 to 4, one on Sunday from 11:30 to 2:30 at Stonehedges. I think we're hoping for a reverse snow day, I guess, because the way it is right now, I'm not sure that's going to happen, but normally you cancel because of snow, but we need some bad. Like to augment or actually accent the we're having a recycled toboggan contest on Sunday. I've seen some of these, pretty neat. I think we're at the forefront of the recycling effort in the county. And I'd like to make a suggestion, perhaps, that we could get more service out of the dragon boat this year as opposed to just a seasonal thing. Maybe we could make it a year-round venture.
Oh, my gosh.
Might consider that, I guess.
Liability issues in the Senate.
Frank Proto.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. This is an announcement for Jim Dennis. Just to bring your attention to the correspondence file in your red folder, there is a public hearing being held by the Public Service Commission with regard to Iberdrola's acquisition of Energy East and NYSEG, and I know how interested you've been and followed the NYSEG situation closely. So that's coming up on February 20th. If you can't make it, I'd like to go as your designee.
Okay.
Secondly, I blessed you all with copies of correspondence regarding the Universal Fund. We're going to start another push on that this year to see if we can't, with the governor's support on broadband, even though the current legislation through the FCC, pardon me, does not permit the access of the Universal Fund for broadband, surprisingly enough, some of us still feel that there's an opportunity that the state is missing out on with that $6 billion sitting on the table. And I was made aware that the county did apply for some of the funding that the in the governor's budget. It hasn't been approved, but that is on the table. A couple of the towns that I represent have also applied for that money. But today I received a response from Governor Spitzer with regard to the letter that I sent, and he indicated that they'll do what they can, and that he's passing it on to members of his staff who can follow up on it. But I want to make sure that we don't lose out on an opportunity to access that fund, and we're going to try. Karen's been very supportive in that effort. One last item, and I don't know who to direct this to. With you being chairman of the board, I don't know, do you automatically assume chairmanship of the IDA?
No, it's going through.
Tim is still the chair of the IDA?
Tim is presently the chair, and that will be going through PDEQ. I believe they're meeting this week.
Then, Tim,
next one.
I don't want. I guess this puts you on the spot, but I've done that before, so it's nothing new. Can you say something about the IDA construction deal that was in the paper with regard to the loss of the IDA's ability to fund not-for-profits?
Yes. The IDA does two quite different things. One is it is enabled to give out tax abatements for private businesses, and usually does that in two different ways. One is for job creation, and the other is the city downtown density policy. And people can argue about whether that should be for job creation too. But anyway, that's one side, is they do tax abatements for private businesses. The other thing that they do is issue tax-exempt bonds for what are called civic facilities. Those are construction that's done by private nonprofit organizations like Cornell University, Ithaca College, TC3, Family and Children's Services. And the piece of the legislation that authorizes those civic facilities bonds has expired. Everybody knew it was going to expire, and there is we did about six of those projects in the last couple of months as everybody hurried to beat the deadline before they expired. The IDA now currently has no authority to do those kind of projects anymore. I think most people believe that the state will eventually reauthorize that, but possibly with some conditions. And it's unclear. You know, I think the biggest and most controversial condition that's been talked about is that the projects would have to be constructed paying prevailing wage to, that all the contractors would have to pay prevailing wage. And personally, I support that, but there is a dilemma that the IDAs are not the only ones authorized to issue bonds for this purpose. The state dormitory authority is also. And so there's a certain amount of competition. And you should all know that our economic development program is largely funded out of the fees that we get on both kinds of projects, but the fees are bigger on the bonds than they are on most of the private business projects that we do. So this matters a lot to us. It funds our economic development program. And IDAs have been able to capture a lot of the business for these tax-exempt bonds because the dormitory authority is slower, more cumbersome, and more expensive. If they put this requirement for prevailing wage on the IDAs only and not on the dormitory authority, it may shift all the business back. And while I support prevailing wage, I support actually getting it, not just moving the projects from one agency that would have to do it to another agency that doesn't.
Kathy Lou Cerrera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While I agree with much of Tim's analysis, there's a key point that needs to be brought up, and that is that the more cumbersome and the slower aspect of the dormitory authority may still exist, even if they should be successful in passing this IDA reform, which has, by the way, gone successfully through the Assembly several times and not ever made it through the Senate. So I think that this crisis is one that is maybe not such a crisis after all, and I believe that cooler heads are going to prevail, but I urge people to look at the whole issue. The reform package is one that not even somebody like I'm a strong supporter of labor and of labor union labor construction, and there's a couple of those provisions that give me pause. It's a reform package that comes with more than one poison pill to it, and that's why it hasn't passed. So I think everybody should just chill a little bit and not equate necessarily the passing of it, the reform package should it pass, which is highly unlikely, with the end of the world. I think that the dormitory authority would still have serious disadvantages compared to IDAs, my analysis.
Any other? Mike Hattery.
Well, we're on this topic. I think it's also important to note that while part of the authority of IDAs is at least temporarily sunsetted, the governor's got a proposal to dramatically increase the amount of money that goes to the oversight agency for such authorities.
Carol Chalk?
This is not on this.
No, go ahead.
Still privilege of the
privilege
floor.
Of the floor for legislators.
Okay, I just wanted to thank, I've embarked on an orientation mostly provided by the various department heads. And I just wanted to thank those who've participated so far and let the others know that I am still getting to each of you in some kind of order, or you're welcome to come to me and offer time. They've been selfless in offering time, including the snowstorm that waged around us. We stayed long enough for it to stop. And I've learned all kinds of interesting tidbits. I've gotten an incredible overview of the
many incredible services and things that the county has to oversee, including such tidbits as the over 700 births and 500 deaths that we keep track of, the 34,000 tax parcels, close to 200 private water systems, youth programs that we help spur around the county, and then with the help of NYSAC, learned such interesting tidbits, which provided a very nice orientation as well, the fact that there were counties in New York State before there was a state. Very interesting, the neighbors banding together to provide the roads and the bridges and the law enforcement. So, thank you to all of you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Tim, then Martha?
I also want to report something I learned at NYSAC. You know that we've been in confrontation with the State Commission of Correction for quite a while here, us and many other counties around the state. And I heard about the story of Dutchess and Ulster counties. It seems that Dutchess County has given in to the Commission of Corrections and built a brand new, very large jail, much larger than they need, and therefore, and also at substantial cost overruns. Ulster has built the jail, and naturally they're interested in boarding prisoners in to help fill up their jail and pay off the cost. Right next to them is Dutchess County, who is under a lot of pressure from the Commission of Corrections to build a newer, bigger jail, and who has refused. They are one of, I think, two other counties that have followed our lead in saying, no, we won't do it. And the Commission of Corrections is not very happy with them. And when Ulster County went to get permission to board prisoners in, it was a multi-step story, but in the end, what happened is they got permission to board in prisoners from anywhere in the state except Dutchess County, the county next door. It is a blatant abuse of power for no purpose other than to punish Dutchess County for not doing what the commission has been telling them to do. And they don't actually have the power to make them do it, so they're abusing the powers they do have to put pressure on them.
Thanks, Tim. Martha?
Well, I went to several workshops at NYSAC having to do with jail expenses and efficiencies and construction. It seems to be, there was something about the criminal justice system in every workshop slot, basically. Nothing about sustainability. Maybe next year. But one workshop I went to, they were talking about how can you, Sullivan County is in the process of making a decision on this. It's a county with 79,000 people in it, although in the summer it swells to 250,000 with summer residents, but they acknowledge that those folks weren't mostly in the jail. The summer residents didn't really fill the jail up, but they're being pressured to build a jail that will cost them $105 million, including all the bonding costs and everything else. And so they were there talking about, well, you could save a little money if you made it a 30-year bond instead of a 20-year bond. It'd be less on your annual cost. I thought, well, but how much more over the time period? And in addition, they did not account for staffing of that jail in that $105 million. And I was just really upset about it. Couple of legislators were there, and they're talking about how they're really struggling with this. They really feel they cannot afford it, and trying to do something different. They're getting pressure from the union, though, actually, to Correction Officers Union wants them to build this facility. They already have something like 284 beds, and they want them to build something like 360. So it's huge. At the same time, in the governor's budget, Governor Spitzer proposes closing something like three or four state facilities. And it just there's just so many levels in which this doesn't make any sense.
Thank you. Any other legislators? We'll move on to our presentations. We're actually going to have two tonight. Carl Haynes called me to say could he be squeezed in for 10 minutes because if he couldn't do it tonight, it would be until April. He wanted to give a quick overview of kind of the state of TC3. So I'll have him go second after Heather on the Empire Zones. Welcome, Heather.
Good evening. I'm Heather Filiberto, and I'm from Tompkins County Area Development. And first, I want to thank, on behalf of TCAD, I want to thank the legislature for your continued funding of our programs and indirectly of our Empire Zone program administrator, which is me. I'm thankful for that. And TCAD, for those of you who don't know, a little refresher, we are a not-for-profit organization. We've been here in Tompkins County since 1964. And really our mission is to create quality jobs, great employment opportunities, and increase the tax base here in Tompkins County. Some of the things that we do, we are responsible for the county's economic development strategy, which we rolled out about this time last year, and we're working with a number of partner organizations to implement strategies related to that economic development strategy. We manage the county's industrial development agency. We manage low-interest rate loan funds and work with a lot of other regional and state incentive providers and bring them in whenever necessary when businesses are looking to expand or create jobs. When their programs fit the needs of our businesses. And finally, we're really happy to add the Empire Zone program to our economic development toolbox here in Tompkins County. The Zone program is a New York State tax incentive program, and it basically reduces the New York State income tax liability of businesses that participate in the program. It was established by New York State in 1986, really to stimulate economic growth in distressed areas. State legislation modified the program in 2001 and pretty significantly again in 2005. There were a lot of loopholes in the program. They had some very significant changes in 2005, closed a lot of those loopholes. I hate to say that the media is still covering those old abuses, but fortunately, Tim Ashmore is here from the Ithaca Journal tonight, and he's been very good to us. He's allowed us to sort of stand on our own merits because we didn't have our zone back before 2005. So we haven't seen any of that in the local paper lately, which I think is a good thing. The program was expanded in 2005 to establish investment zones on top of these old distressed areas. And that's really where the county comes in. We weren't a real distressed area, so we weren't eligible for an Empire Zone. After 2005, we suddenly became eligible. Actually, the county, under the leadership of TCAD, we worked with the county and prepared an application for Empire Zone status in 2002 and again in 2005. So in 2005, we submitted our second application and we were awarded our zone designation here in Tompkins County in July of 2006. It's 2 square miles separated into 6 subzone areas throughout the county. And those areas were largely identified through a very public participatory process back in 2002 and then revised again in 2005. So it was really based on the input of the municipalities, where businesses are located, where we'd like to see businesses locate, where there is access to infrastructure, or where there soon will be access to infrastructure. We do administer the program. It's the county's zone. And the county has identified an administrative board. Ed Marks from the planning department is the chair of the board. And most of you know that I used to work for Ed in the planning department. So that was a very nice transition, and he's still great to work for. Mike Hattery also sits on our board. And Carl Haynes from TC3 also sits on our board. One of the really neat things, I think, about the Empire Zone program is that it is a state program, but we have a lot of local control here in Tompkins County through our zone board and through having an administrator here locally that can interface with businesses and really sort of knows what our issues are and what our needs are here in Tompkins County. Or at least I think I like to think that I do on most days. Our zone board, one of the first things that we did is we put together and approved a development plan that sets goals and strategies for all six of our subzone areas. It identifies the kinds of businesses that can participate in our program. It sets performance measures for our program. Some of the examples of some of our goals in our downtown subzone area that stretches from the Commons all the way down State Street through Inlet Island and Carpenter Business Park and the Inlet Island. Some of those goals are around attracting, expanding, and retaining manufacturing and high-tech companies, increasing job training, and attracting and expanding retail and commercial establishments in that downtown corridor. And primarily in all of our subzone areas, we want to see manufacturing, high-tech businesses, things that have traditionally flourished in our community. The downtown zone is really the only zone that we are allowing retail and commercial service firms to participate, and again, it's just sort of a limited type, specific type of businesses downtown that have been mostly identified by the Ithaca Downtown Partnership strategic plan as something that's needed downtown. The development plan also establishes sort of minimum job creation and investment thresholds that we'd like to see for businesses that participate in the program. And most of my day-to-day work really is interfacing with businesses. They call and say, what is this Empire Zone? Am I located in the Empire Zone? How do I access these benefits? So really a lot of what I do is that interface and then helping them to get certified and then to participate. And at tax time, they start calling me and their accountants to figure out sort of how it works from one year to the next. The last thing that our development plan does is it identifies how we're going to track whether businesses are meeting their goals. And every 3 years, on a three-year cycle, we will look at what businesses have actually done based on what they said they were going to do. And we can move to decertify businesses so that they can no longer participate. I think one of the big complaints about the zone program statewide is that there's businesses that for years have been reaping these tax benefits when they haven't created any jobs. So that was something that I think was really important that we wrote into our plan right up front, and we'll let businesses know that, you know, we're not going to let them continue to participate any longer than 3 years at least once we see what they're actually doing. So how do businesses participate in the program? They have to meet minimum job creation and investment thresholds. They have to be listed as a targeted industry or a targeted business or a strategic industry in our zone development plan. And so I sort of work with them to see what their goals are and if they meet the goals of our program. And then they submit an application to become zone certified. Our local board approves those applications. We then send them on to the state for final approval from both the Departments of Economic Development and the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor checks to make sure that they don't have any labor violations, that they're all in compliance at the state level. That process, from the time our zone board approves them until we get final word from the state, takes about 90 days on average right now. And then I hand out certificates to businesses. They're eligible to participate for 10 tax years. What the program does, each tax year, there's a laundry list of tax benefits. Based on what they actually do, they can apply for these benefits. There's a $1,500 wage tax credit for a period of 5 consecutive years for each new job that they create. For manufacturers and R&D firms, there's an investment tax credit. There is a credit for real property taxes paid that can equal up to the amount they're paying in property taxes for up to 10 years. There's a couple of other credits too, but they are basically contingent upon the business each year creating jobs, making investments, or there really isn't any benefit for them to apply for. I wanted to tell you a little bit about our performance measures for our zone. I did mention that we got our zone designation in July of 2006. I came on board in January of 2007, so I've been with TCAD for about a year now. I was left in very good hands. They got the program up and running and the zone board established before I came. But administratively, we did adopt our development plan, which is about 40 pages thick. It's on our website if anyone's interested in seeing that. We notified twice. We sent out two mailings to over 1,200 property owners and business owners located in our zone areas, notifying them of the zone designation and inviting them to workshops to come and learn more about our program. We did provide two very large workshops last year and then a number of smaller targeted workshops throughout the year. We established a capital credits program, which in addition to the tax incentives, it provides a 25% tax credit to investors that make direct equity investments in zone certified businesses. And it also provides a 25% tax credit to companies or individuals who donate $1,000 or more to a community development project that's undertaken by a nonprofit organization located in the zone. I'll give you an example. The Seventh Art Theater campaign was kicked off about March last year. They're fundraising to outfit their new fine arts cinema that's going to be located in downtown Ithaca. They came to us. They were approved an allocation of credits, so all of their donors that donate $1,000 or more will get a 25% tax credit. So that's our little way of supporting the nonprofit side of development in our Empire Zone. One other administrative performance measure. As a result of our first zone annual performance report that was submitted last summer, they increased our annual administrative funding from $15,000 to $30,500. So that was a big increase, and it was based on us meeting the goals in our development plan, actually adopting our development plan, and on the quality of our applications that we submitted for zone businesses. So by all means, on the administrative side, I think the first full year of the program has been a success. But the biggest measure really of our success is our businesses and how they're flourishing. At the end of 2006, we certified two businesses. That was in December, and I think they were signed and approved locally on December 28th. According to their business annual reports for the end of 2006, they had an average of 131 employees in 2006, with overall capital investments that year of $208 million. They received almost $98,000 between those two businesses in tax incentives for 2006. In 2007, we certified 34 more businesses. And of those 34 businesses, they're projecting creating 762 jobs and investing $91 million in capital investments over the next 5 years. And Martha, I added this number for you. Their projected Empire Zone incentives over that 5 year period for 762 jobs, $91 million in investments, is roughly $47 million. Now, Martha has asked me more than once if I can include that number, and I'm a little nervous to include that number because the program really is performance-based. They tell us what they think they're going to do, and we run it through a little cost-benefit calculator, and it tells us, well, this is what we think you might get. It's actually based on what they actually do. So I will give that number with that sort of caveat. If they do what they say they're going to do, they could realize $47 million in tax incentives over 5 years.
Thank you, Heather. I didn't write it down, so if that makes you feel any better.
I'm sure somebody did. I'm sure Tim got that. But I think that we should really see dramatic increases in the number of actual jobs created and capital investments for our zone businesses at the end of 2007 when we start receiving that information in June or July of this year. We do have 36 businesses that are certified now, and my phone is still ringing. So I think that this year there's still a lot to be done. We have a lot more businesses to reach. And I just think that it's great that we're able to provide incentives to businesses here without having to use local dollars, cherished and scarce local dollars, that it comes from the state. And we're really helping businesses to stay here and to grow here. And thank you for the opportunity to let you know what I'm up to. I'm going to leave some flyers. I'll pass them around, and I'll leave some on the table, too. And
thank
I
you.
Can answer questions.
Thank you, Heather. You had given a presentation to, I believe, Planning Development and Environmental Quality Committee regarding the difference between Empire Zone and IDAs. It was kind of a front and back, very concise, and that would be useful, I think, to other legislators as well as that committee.
Okay. Yeah, I did do that for the IDA.
Okay. Are there quick questions from anyone to Heather?
I do.
Leslie.
I have a couple of really quick questions. You said for each job a business creates, they get a $1,500 tax credit, or it's just overall $1,500, but $1,500 per job?
$1,500 per job for five consecutive years.
For five consecutive years.
As long as
years.
That job is still there, each of those 5 years.
Okay. And then my next question has to do with the decertification process.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that can be done locally, or do you also have to go back to the state?
We recommend decertification to the state, and from what I've heard, when local zone boards recommend decertification, the state follows suit.
Thank you.
Any other quick questions? Martha.
Heather, do you know whether the proposed budget from the governor includes any changes, or is there anything coming up this year that will affect the program?
Well, there are still more than a handful of bills at the legislative level. The governor did step in and made some changes to the program in the last couple of weeks that we all found out about after the changes were made. One of the things that the program requires is that businesses meet a cost-benefit analysis. For every $15 in new wages and benefits and capital investments that the business makes, the state's willing to put in a dollar. So it's a 15-to-1 ratio, a dollar in incentives. They raised that ratio to 20-to-1. So it's setting the bar higher, and I think that what that's going to do is reduce the number of businesses that are going to be eligible to participate. It's going to cut some of the incentive dollars that the state would be paying out over future years. But that's all that's happened now. We hear that there are things down the road, but I can't really speak to that yet.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Heather. We're going to move
Thank
on.
You.
Michael.
I know I said this at another board meeting, but Heather wasn't here. I think there was some spade work done to get this off the ground, but I think Heather has just done an excellent job, as I think some of the figures demonstrate, both in terms of engaging local businesses and getting them involved, and also in working very effectively with local municipal officials that have pieces of the zone in their boundaries. So I think we owe her a gratitude. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. We move on to a presentation, State of the College, from Carl Haynes. I think he has his handouts in advance. Welcome, Carl. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you for working me into your busy agenda tonight. I might just say before I get to my remarks, I'd want to echo what Mike shared. I think serving on the board when I first was appointed to the Empire Zone by this board, I was a bit overwhelmed by the complexity of the regulations and kind of a bit intimidated by the negative publicity these Empire Zones had around the state, and how do we kind of prevent that from happening here. But I can say that Heather has just done an extraordinarily fine job of a very steep learning curve to keep this zone functioning very, very well for our county. I just wanted to be on record as saying that in her behalf as well as a board member. In any event, what I'm passing around is my annual president's report. As you know from other years, behind this report is about a 15 or 20 page report that I provide to the Board of Trustees each year on what the college has accomplished. We extract from that some kind of key items that we put together then in this report that goes out to the community. Obviously, if anyone's interested in the more in-depth report, we'd be happy to share that with you. Just to highlight the content or the focus of this report, part of it is to kind of share accomplishments of this past year. We, again, it's focused on last budget year and the kind of the public relations aspects of those kinds of things. The other focus of this, as you'll see on the right-hand page as you leaf through it, is what we call indicators and evidence. We're trying to, that's our way of trying to present to the community a fuller story of how we're holding ourselves accountable in terms of how we're accomplishing what it is we say we're doing to serve students and to bring about learning. We have indicators for each of our goals, and we have evidence that we try to gather to support each of those indicators as to the extent that we're accomplishing that. So this is our first attempt at presenting it in this particular way. You'll notice quite a significant difference in the format from other years. I think we have a long way to go to try to continue to improve on that, but I wanted you to kind of hopefully recognize that we are trying to continue. I wanted to be happy to answer questions about the report later if you'd like, but I thought I'd kind of shift in the few minutes that I do have to talk a bit about the college today and really some of the things that are underway or in play, if you will, at the college right now. First of all, we're wrapping up this year, within the next couple of months, the master plan project. That's probably the major accomplishment of this last 2 or 3 years for the college. And again, I just want to say a hearty thank you to this board for the support you provided along the way as we've gone through a number of different kinds of changes in that to accommodate that. I can, you know, the phase one is complete. The phase two of the Learning Commons is part of that is open. The other is in the process of being complete. The Student Center should open within another couple of months. But I can report to you that public, the visitors that come to campus, the students and parents and prospective students, the faculty and staff, there's just a real excitement as they begin to see what the transformation has been to the physical facilities on our campus. I'm one of the few people left on campus that can relate to 1974 when we moved into the new building at that time, having lived in temporary quarters over in Groton prior to that time. The excitement is parallel to that kind of excitement. It's truly a wonderful time. And the investment that I think the communities and the state and others have made to accommodate not only our growing student enrollment, but I think probably more importantly, creating the kind of learning environment for our students to grow and to flourish and achieve their learning outcomes, I think, is being accomplished. And again, I want to thank you for that support. Another major initiative underway right now, actually will be culminating next month, is our Middle States reaccreditation. As you know, we go through that every 10 years. We hope we're reaccredited for a 10-year period. The leading up to the reaccreditation visit, which will occur on our campus on March 9th to the 12th, when a team of folks from presidents, administrators, faculty from colleges outside of New York State, typically Maryland, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and the Middle States region, will visit our campus. We've completed a 2-year self-study process, looking at ourselves, developing all kinds of data, surveys, and so on, in terms of how well we're doing as a community college. This team will come in, make a visit, obviously interview. They'll spend 2.5 days on campus. And in our community, they're going to be located right downtown here for their headquarters, if you will. And then eventually have to make a recommendation to the commission in terms of whether our reaccreditation status. We hope that'll be favorable. We should know, we hope, sometime in June, the outcome of that process. Obviously, reaccreditation is very important, but equally, and perhaps in some respects more important, is what we're learning in that process. And I wanted to share a half a dozen key themes, if you will, that have come out of not only our Middle States reaccreditation process, but also work that we've done last year and finishing up this year with the Policy Center at the University of South Carolina on the freshman year experience. How do we make that more meaningful and successful? It's called the Foundations of Excellence Initiative for us, and that too has engaged a college-wide debate and analysis. We have our annual fall day. Basically, what I'm trying to convey here is we've had a very broad institutional conversation about what we need to be doing and where our priorities are in terms of how we're going to move this college forward. Where are we going from here? We've been growing. You got physical changes. Now how are we going to continue to ratchet up, if you will, our service to our communities? There are six items, and I'll just mention them very briefly so you get a flavor of the kinds of things we're working on. First of all is the residential campus development. As you know, we're growing student housing. Even with our student housing expansion, our student resident program serves about 25% of our full-time students. So we still are a commuter college, but yet we're also increasingly a resident life program on campus. We've been working at that, obviously, for the last few years. But as we anticipate the kind of growth, we need to continue to strengthen the integration, if you will, of our curricular, co-curricular, social, recreational, residential life, safety, security kinds of services we're providing to students. And we continue to try to strengthen that and to improve that, and that's the focus of many initiatives on campus as we look to this next couple of years. Second is the improvement of our, what we're calling the student transition programming. It's this whole, you read a lot in journals and sometimes in the media about how the dropout rate of how students don't succeed through their freshman year and so on in college. And we're addressing that head on with this freshman year experience and looking at a number of initiatives to try to improve that. improving our academic advisement services, we've made tremendous headway in our collective bargaining with our faculty to address some of those issues, and now we need to take that further and integrate a lot of those agreements into how we function and administrative practices and so on. The fourth is continued development of meaningful assessment processes. We're very committed to the assessment work we do. Unfortunately, the challenge there is getting good, reliable data and being able to dig deep into the data to extract meaningful information and to help drive our decision making. We've got a software package that we have now implemented. We're about ready to enter into a training phase with that. We're very excited about that. We think it's going to, again, begin to transform how we do data analysis and develop data to drive our decision-making processes throughout the organization, not just at the senior level. The fifth item is adjusting to some organizational changes. I'm sure most of you know that Bob Ross, who's been a longtime dean of our college services, is retiring this year. I've taken advantage of that retirement and restructured our senior level administration. Without getting into all the detail about that, it's going to take us a year or two to adjust to some of those changes, but I feel strongly that the structural changes we're making are going to be very helpful to us as we move forward and focus on our entire college community around our learning centeredness. And last, and this one might sound a little funny in the context of the others because it could be a subset of some of the others, but that's the issue of student transportation. It remains a major issue for us. I've got three transit systems that show up on our campus from Tioga, Cortland, and Tompkins counties, and yet the biggest complaint I get from students is about transportation. So we're on the case with that, and we're looking at that in a lot of different ways to try to address that. But I guess, again, to summarize, the combination of our new physical facilities together with these operational initiatives that I've just kind of outlined for you, I believe are going to continue to strengthen our services and our commitment to students and to our learning centeredness as an institution, and of course strengthen the kinds of services that I think you as a county sponsor of our college have come to expect of our college at TC3. So with that, save the college address, I'll be happy to entertain any questions that anyone might have on this or anything else.
Thank you, Carl. I particularly appreciate the indicators, evidence portions of your meeting your goals. Kathy Lucero.
I really like this format, and I think the examples in it are wonderful. I just wanted to ask you, did I see a press release recently about a cooperative venture involving training for green buildings, an initiative that TC3 was a partner in? Or
we've got a number of things going on in that realm. We're doing a lot of training in the construction trades, and there's one segment of that I believe does include addressing the green buildings, if you will, and so on. We also have a committee that's completing recommendations, and actually the committee's going to be ongoing, so I'm not going to suggest they're completing, but they are working on sustainability recommendations for me as to whether or not the community college can commit to the college university president's commitment to climate change. And I will be, they're going to make a presentation to the board on that this month. And next month, I expect to have a recommendation for the board on that. I think you're going to be very pleased with the outcome of that. But we're not ready tonight to make a public announcement about that.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any other quick questions? Thank you again, Carl, for coming.
Appreciate your summary. Thank you again for working me into your agenda.
Our pleasure. I'll just move quickly to Chair's report. I will only mention, not NYSAC, not necessarily walk you through other presentations that people went through. Others have mentioned it. I do want you to, though, open your red folders. Most of you, I think, should have the impact. This is now New York State Association of Counties' initial take of the impact on counties. If you want to turn to page 7 of that, I just want to point out two quick potential impacts. We've asked the administration to do a more in-depth analysis, and I'll be presenting that to Budget Committee, I believe, next Monday, and then Budget will present it to the full legislature. So we'll have essentially a table of pluses and minuses. My interpretation of this budget is when you squeeze one place, the balloon pops up another place. And on page 7, what I want to point out, under welfare/child welfare, under the first paragraph, there's a proposal to change this long-standing historic agreement, sharing the cost of public assistance, and the safety net program, which has been shared by the state and counties 50-50, by 2% in each direction. So 2% more will be paid by the counties, 2% less by the state. I think that will be a significant effort by most counties to push back against that, because once that historic from really 1938 has changed, it could continue to erode. And secondarily, if you look, I guess it's the two paragraphs under that. It starts with, in yet another unprecedented break. This is a potential cost shift regarding our reimbursement for detention, placement in detention facilities. Those are just two of many areas we have to analyze across the state budget, and we will get that analysis from administration, and we'll be able to question and answer questions about that at our next legislative meeting after it goes through Budget Committee. It's very hard for us to very quickly respond, front page of the paper, so to speak, of what is our response to the governor's budget. We have to do an in-depth analysis, and I hope that we don't have quick assessments without having this time to really review it in depth. Tim?
Does that mean you don't want me to say what I think?
You can go ahead and say it.
Because Ken Cornell, the staff at NYSAC who analyzes this stuff, walked us through it, and included in the things he gave us was the governor's analysis of how the budget impacted counties. And the governor's analysis says that we come out $349 million to the positive. $274 million of that is by not reneging on the Medicaid cap or the Family Health Plus takeover. That leaves $75 million in real items, of which two are that the counties are authorized to increase some fees, and so that's counted as a benefit for counties, and he's going to collect sales tax on internet purchases, which no other state has yet figured out how to do. So if you take those two together are worth $90 million. That has us negative already. And then there's the two items that Mike just mentioned, which he doesn't show as a cost to counties on his sheet. And when asked why, the answer was, because we're not going to bill you till January. And those are worth $76 million for counties statewide. So that happens to be a budgeting trick that I don't think is legal, and I mean it's legal for them to not charge us until January, but it still has to go on our taxes and be collected and shown on our books. So the days of tax shifting from the state to the counties are back again.
And Tim has done an overview analysis of statewide impacts, how the balloon pops up here and there. We will do an analysis county, county departments. Nathan.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, is that at the next budget and capital meeting, we will do a review of the state budget impact specific to Tompkins County and specific to our departments.
I have two other quick announcements, Martha.
On the budget and capital agenda, Nathan, is
yes.
that report sent under separate cover? That's not this
no,
one.
No,
no, no. It's okay. Actually, it's going to literally break down individual departments and how it affects our department with specific dollars.
So can we all get a copy of that?
And their projections, of course, their estimates. What?
I hope we can all get a copy of that.
Yes.
Thank you.
In addition to what's in your red folder, I didn't get enough copies of, but there was a PowerPoint presentation, and I have copies of the PowerPoint presentation. Kathy Covert has copies on your chair. Before this meeting, there was a meeting of committee chairs, so if you feel like your next committee meeting, you have arrived at committee boot camp, you will know that people are increasing their rigor in terms of how they're running committee meetings, so I can be blamed for that. One more thing, this is the season when people are getting their assessment notices, and we all got some preliminary analysis of the 2008 countywide revaluation with some background information. We will get more of that. I wanted to point out, though, that the second page of that chart that we got, we had Valeria here at our last meeting talking about the impact, and it just shows in the real dollars of how roughly one-third after the preliminary analysis of reevaluation, one-third of households will pay less, one-third will be roughly in the same category, and one-third in a greater payment in terms of cash, not necessarily in your reassessments. But this is complicated information. It's not easily digestible walking into a grocery store and explaining it to someone, so take time to understand it. Call the assessment department. You'll get more information if you if you're looking for it in terms of how they're packaging it and trying to get the public educated about this. That's the end of my report. I have no appointments for tonight's meeting. Let's move on to County Administrator's report.
Okay, just a continuation on the budget. What we have done is we've asked each of the departments to do an individual analysis. They've done a really nice job. I saw the preliminary draft of that this morning. I think you'll like it. It's really well done. So hats off to the departments, and Norma did a real nice job of that too. One thing that was in the budget that was kind of nice to see, I mean, sometimes you get little prizes, and a few months ago, Don Barber and I went to Albany, and we talked to the insurance department, and we told them all about our SMSI grant for health, for the countywide consortium for health insurance. And we told them what we thought were the legal obstacles, and we would really appreciate some help. And the governor's office had offered to provide that support, and they seemed to be really paying attention. And lo and behold, in the governor's executive budget, it's almost word for word just about everything we asked for. Mm-hmm. So sometimes they listen. So sometimes it's worth driving to Albany. I was very encouraged by that. As everyone has said, there's some negatives and there are positives in the budget. How it shakes out, it just depends on what you think is going to happen and what you think is going to happen at the federal level. And I'll try to give you a little bit of insight on what I think might happen or where I think the pitfalls might be. That summary should be out by roughly noon tomorrow. One other thing at NYSEC, Valeria Coggan, she was mentioned earlier, our county assessor, was one of the speakers at one of the sessions, and she just bowled them all over. I mean, the person behind me leaned forward and said, "Don't you just love her?" She did a fantastic job, and it's really easy to see why there are some things in the executive budget that are very specific to Tompkins County and very significant, and it will make a difference in our budget next year. And that was due to her work. A lot of our department heads do a really good job of going to Albany and talking to the right people at the right time, and it shows up in the budget. You see that a lot in the public safety arena, but this was nice to see in the assessment. And then one last thing, there was a request by Legislator Proto for an official file for 55 Brown Road, and we have created that. Rel Lamero will be the person that's keeping that file, and that will be at facilities anytime anyone wants it. It is pretty much what we do anyway, but we're going to make sure that it's very specifically identified. So anytime anyone wants anything, just call Rel, and you'll see that information. Okay.
Thank you, Steve. Any questions?
Yeah.
One. Frank.
Steve, that file, will that be available to the general public as well?
Sure. That's public information.
Thanks.
Report from County Attorney.
I do not have a report.
And our finance director, David Squires.
Well, I'll just follow up on the earlier discussion about the IDA. There was a flurry of activity. The IDA received payments just this week from Longview, closing on Longview, on Family and Children's Services, on the Cornell Heating and Cooling Project, and Titanic Aviation. And that may be the end of it. But one of the problems with the IDA is there's a turmoil in the bond market. All the IDA financings are special entities, and security against those bonds are generally lease payments. And in the industry, they purchase bond insurance to guarantee principal interest payments. And right now, the future of bond insurers is uncertain. So besides not having the authority to do any more transactions, there may not be anybody willing to lend money on deals until that situation settles. And the other thing about what's going on is the collapse of interest rates. While borrowing rates have gone down, I mean, we borrowed money at the first week of the year, and we got a rate that was very good. But interest rates have gone down. One county got a rate under 2% for a one-year note. Wow. But the interest earnings rates have collapsed. We were earning at the beginning of the year about 4.75% on money market funds. Now they're 3%.
Let's talk, Dave.
And we estimated an average return on our investments this year of about 4.25%. So that is not a good way to start off the year, because that will translate into probably a $100,000 loss in interest earnings if the present patterns holds up. Retail sales, everybody's reading, you know, they're down. We didn't experience that the last quarter of the year. Actually, the county, I think we ended up about 11% increase in the last quarter of the year because of strong payments made by New York State in the month of December. But it's unrealistic to think that that pattern's going to continue. So this is going to be a challenge, 2008.
Thank you, David. We have no reports from other county staff that I'm aware of. We'll move on. Are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Seeing none, we'll move. I have no appointment, but we'll move to the consent agenda. These are resolutions that are not expected to be controversial. They can pass in a single vote. We just have two tonight. Please designate if you want me to pull them. Resolution A, increase solid waste division petty cash funds. Resolution B, delegation of authority to authorize certain tax refunds and credits of $2,500 and under. And those are the two. If they're not being pulled, who'd like to move them? Frank? Tim seconds. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Move on to standing committee reports. Frank Proto, Health and Human Services Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Health and Human Services Committee will meet tomorrow at 3 o'clock. It'll be our first official meeting of the year. Please come prepared to at least discuss committee goals. We want to begin the discussion on that. We'll review the 2007 goals, and I'm hoping Nathan will be able to guide us through some of that. And I just encourage you to review the agenda based on the meeting we had before this with Michael and the other committee chairs. We have a busy agenda tomorrow. We'd like to move through it quickly because there are some new items that will be probably coming up as the year progresses. 3 o'clock tomorrow, Old Jail Conference Room. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Leslie Bean Claiborne.
Facilities and Infrastructure met on January 17th. It was our first meeting. The crux of our meeting, or the most important thing, we talked quite a bit about the proposed Lansing Sewer District, which could impact the airport. And part of what we've asked the Ed Marks to do and others who were involved is to go back, get more information, bring some sort of proposal that we can look at and react to rather than trying to react to something in a vacuum. So that's where we are at this point with that. Other than that, the only other thing was on consent agenda. The rest of it was reports.
Thank you, Leslie. Any questions? Mike Hattery?
That's the impact of a town sewer district on the airport?
Pardon?
That's the impact of a town sewer district on the airport?
Lansing, yes.
I'm sorry.
Because
a portion
of the land that they want to use is airport property.
We move on. Human Resources Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you, Michael. The committee will meet Thursday at 3:30 for its first meeting of 08. We will be discussing, we still have two bargaining units that we're at impasse with, the blue collar and the road patrol, and the dates have not yet been set, I don't believe, for the impasse discussions with either one, but that hopefully is coming soon. And the County Administrator Search Committee met today, and let me back up a little bit. On Wednesday the 30th, we interviewed candidates. Today, we interviewed candidates. I was hoping by the end of the day that we may be able to move forward, but as things go, we have to have one more meeting of the complete committee to finish up our recommendation. And that concludes my report. Oh, one more thing. Through the magic of text messaging, I found out that my announcement at the beginning of the meeting is at the chapter house.
Nice.
On February 16th. So there is someone looking at this meeting.
Yeah.
And that concludes my report.
And are you going to be asking for an executive session for personnel matters?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And at the end of the meeting, please stay around. Government Operations Committee, Greg Stevenson's chair.
The committee met prior to this meeting to approve some business that we've already taken care of in this session. Our next meeting is Friday, February 8th at 2 p.m. I have a resolution C, approval of 2008 succession of members of the county legislature to serve in the absence of the chair and vice chair. And I so move.
Kathy Luce Herrera seconds. Is there discussion? Tyke Randall?
Could you explain to me what the thought was at the committee level? Because this has changed quite a bit from last year, and I just want to understand that better.
With respect to what exactly? The number of successors or the order of successors?
The rationale, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of weight was given certainly to seniority or institutional experience.
That's why I'm not on the list.
That's why Nathan's not on the list, yes.
Oh, really?
Any further discussion? Go ahead, Ty.
Just to make a comment, I'm trying to make my mother happy tonight. She always taught me to respect my elders, and with that being said, it bothers me a bit that, you know, we have, if something ever happened, certainly would be under duress. Heaven forbid if that ever happens. But I would feel very comfortable if it was named as a person, whoever's had the most experience or the longevity-wise on here. And I guess I make that comment knowing that I used to collect fossils, and it's, you know, I learned a lot from that. So that's my comment on that, I guess. Not that I'm talking about Frank.
Further discussion. Tim Joseph.
I kind of agree with that. In the past, we've made a point of making this a list of committee chairs, and I thought a lot of the point of that was that for something that is very unlikely to happen, it wasn't worth ranking people personally. Just get a list of committee chairs and let it stay the same. But if we're going to shuffle it each time based on who's in those committee chairmanships, we might as well name the people.
Is there a motion following that comment? to add someone's name at the end of the sentence, you know, chair, blah, blah, blah? Seeing none, Kathy Lucerer.
I'm supporting this resolution, and one of the reasons I'm supporting it is because, and it's not even a response to yours, but what Tim said, it's because things can happen during the year. For example, the reason we have vice chairs is because in case there's a situation where the chair is unable to serve, the vice chair can step in. I think that argues for using the titles, and this particular sequence I think is more than acceptable to me, in particular considering the responsibilities that the particular committees have. I think it's an appropriate designation and one I would support, and I did so in seconding the motion.
Greg,
I'd just like to note that in 2007 and in 2008, to some extent, the rationale for this was debated. There are lots of preferences on either side of this argument, names versus positions, and I think some thoughtful debate has occurred to that issue, at least the past 2 years that I know of. So it isn't something that isn't considered or isn't on the table. We talked about it. This is just how things shook out, good, bad, or otherwise.
Thanks. Any further comments? Are we ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution C as presented?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? One opposed? What's that? And Frank is missing. Okay. It passes 13-1. Move on to our next committee report. Martha Robertson, Planning Development Environmental Quality Committee.
Tyke, I'm not sure how to take the issue about fossils. If no, I guess I'm...
It wasn't directed at you.
Shame on you. I accept that. Planning has not met this year. We will meet next Thursday, February 14th, 3 o'clock. That's a time change, folks. It's half hour earlier than last year, and we'll be in the old jail. We have a really full and, I think, very interesting agenda, and I hope planning committee members bring their best thinking caps. We'll really be trying to focus on some meaty goals for the year, and looking at the calendar, we will also have a lot of information from workforce development, and a lot of things happening with the WIB this year. And related to that, I might have mentioned this at the legislative privilege, but I forgot. This coming Monday, February 11th, will be a presentation of initial presentation by the consultants working on the workforce study of Tompkins County. It'll be the analysis of the Tompkins County labor market shed. Very interesting work that TCAD is doing in conjunction with one of their three main economic development goals. So the presentation will be 8:30 to 10 at the public library. Their initial flyer looks like this. Their initial presentation of the results, and then a further 10:15 to 11:15, sort of drilling down even further into the analytic tool that the consultants are presenting to us, sort of web-based analysis of the data. It should be really interesting. I did ask Julia Maddock if they could perhaps present to this to the whole legislature, and they will probably be doing that maybe in April after they've refined the report a little bit. But if you want a first look, that's Monday morning.
Thank you.
That's my report.
Any questions? Moving on to Budget and Capital Committee. Nathan Shinagawa, Chair.
Yes, the Budget and Capital Committee, will be meeting next Monday, February 11th, from 3:30 to 5:30 in the Old Joe Conference Room. We're going to be discussing a few things, mostly talking about our committee goals and finalizing the budget calendar. We also are going to have a discussion, as I mentioned, about the state budget impact specific to Tompkins County. And that will be happening around 4 o'clock, so if you want to go and participate in that, come then. But other than that, it's a standard budget and capital meeting, so I don't have much else to report. Yeah. And if I might add, by the way, actually, Not relating to budget and capital, I do want to mention what Steve alluded to, the SMSI subcommittee of TCOG that's working on the healthcare consortium. And just to update people on progress of, on the healthcare consortium, all the municipalities now have submitted all of their benefit claims information, what kind of health insurance programs that they have. So we have all that information now, which is great. Our consultant is developing different types of plans within a proposed healthcare consortium, and we've also opened up the process, and have talked to some unions to let them know what we're doing, so that way it's as open and as possible. And so, so that's going really well. We're meeting every 2 weeks, and I think it's really going to be a fantastic savings for Tompkins County, and will also, I think, benefit workers as well.
Great. Thanks for the update. Move on to Public Safety Committee. Tim Joseph, Chair.
The Public Safety Committee has met, but we didn't do anything that the rest of you need to hear about yet.
Okay. Thank you. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Wasn't looking clear.
I want to follow that. I'm going to start my report by saying I'm very proud of Tompkins County and some of the work that we're doing in diversity and inclusion. Having attended the NYSEC conference and gotten the final number that there were probably a little over 1,000 people in attendance, when one can count on your hands and maybe a couple of toes the number of identifiable people of color attending the conference, it was very interesting. And so for the Tompkins County contingent of those of us who attended, seven of us I think it was, we had a whopping three of us who were people of color. So we made quite a showing. So I'm very proud of us as a county in that regard. WDIC met on January 23rd, and a couple of things we talked about. Some of you, if not all of you, might have read about the Lansing Residential Center and its potential downsizing. Although we recognize that that's not a bad thing because children are being incarcerated, we raise concerns about the impact on employees and employment for them as a community, something we need to be aware of. Patricia Carey, our DSS commissioner, did share with us that the Office of Children and Family Services has undergone some major shifts in terms of their recognition for the needs of children, better treatment, and more preventative work rather than locking them up. So stay tuned. We're going to keep trying to see what kind of impact it will have on staff. One of the good suggestions that came out of there is for us to perhaps touch base with the state to see if a number of these employees, many of whom I know are people of color, could potentially work in other non-for-profit organizations within the community, still stay on the state payroll, but work in non-for-profit agencies providing some of the child services level of treatment and counseling, et cetera, that could happen. So we're going to investigate that. We continue to talk about our diversity statement and the framed logos and statement, and we're continuing to roll them out to different departments. Hopefully there'll be more conversation happening, especially with the agencies, front and center, especially with the agencies and other organizations that get funding from the county but aren't necessarily departments of the county. One of the things we do want to find out, the marketing team, we do want to find out is, do these agencies have diversity statements? You know, what is their policy around it, and to see if they will also be buy into what the county is trying to do, because they too get our dollars and represent a lot of what we do. So the marketing team is continuing to work on that. And I think that was the gist of the more involved conversations that we had. Yep.
Thank you, Leslie. Any questions?
I'll just comment that at New York State Association of Counties, there were five legislators and six either department heads or staff, so it was a total of 11. We had a good representation.
Before I move to minutes, I do want to make a note. We had the loss of three tremendous community leaders, longtime community leaders, in the last few weeks since we last met. Don Barr has passed away, Harvey Fireside, and Ken Myers. So I think just take a moment to acknowledge that it's a tremendous loss, and our thoughts are with the family.
Thank you.
Who would like to move the minutes of our previous meeting, January 15th? Nathan moves it. Greg seconds. Any changes? Are ready to vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. We'd like to move to go into executive session for matters of personnel. Jim Dennis, Tim Joseph seconds. All in favor?
Any action when we come out?
There'll be no action when we come out. No anticipated action. We will adjourn the meeting when we come out, and we're going to try to get you out of here in a reasonable time to be able to vote if you haven't
Thank
voted
you.
Yet.
Yes.
Duly.
I want to join Frank and Frank. I said I wanted to join you in voting for Hillary. I'm glad you did. I saw you voted.
We're going to discuss contract.
Hillary.
Contract.
You know who I'm talking about. I wasn't supposed to tell him. Sorry.
Well, it was both the reasons.